หริโอสหนาวะบัตุสหนาวุนัตตุสหวิยังคะวะวะไหเตจัสวินาวะดิตามัสตุมาเวรเวชาวะไหโอมชันติชันติชันติOm Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivastari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So, Nyaya Sutras, then, page 8. So, I guess we go. Shamshaya, doubt. Objection. The separate mention of doubt, etc., among the 16s, it means from 3 to 16. Categories of knowledge is useless, as they are included within the first two categories, Praman and Pramaya, and thus are not completely different from them. You know, so the point is, that's their doubt.Because someone might say, you know, well, just Praman and Pramaya, why do you need everything else? Why all this extra stuff? Because they're all included in the other two. Yeah, yeah, like that. So then, Uttara, the answer. This is true, means they are connected like that. Nevertheless, for the benefit of mankind, four branches of study, Vidya, each having its own unique subject matter, are prescribed, right? So...That then is the four branches are the Veda, Trayi, Polity, Dandaniti, Agriculture and Commerce, Varta, and Logic and Andrikshi. So you have the Veda, and then you see you have the knowledge of the Brahmas, the knowledge of the kings, and the knowledge of the Vaishyas. Like that. So that's there. The study of logic on Vikshika Vidya is the fourth branch, and its unique subject matter, Prasthana, includes these remaining 14 categories, namely Shamshaya, doubt, and everything. So they're included there. Yes, you can say as they're connected, but if they're not connected, how will they have any value? Right? It means if you have subject matters that don't have any connection to each other, what's the point?You know, why do you call it the wheels? They're connected to the axle, which is connected to the gearbox. You know, differential, which is connected to the drive shaft, which is connected to the gearbox, which is connected to the how you say, the, no, that would be the, what is that, camshafts on top, whatever it is. The one on the bottom, that the pistons, the so that is the pistons. So actually, why call it wheels? We just call it a piston. Because the piston moves, the wheels go.You know, just like in the song for the kids, you know, the pistons on the bus go. Okay. So, without the separate mention of these, logic would have been merely...a study of the self. So if you just say Praman and Pramaya, study of the self is Praman and Pramaya. Right? So the spiritual knowledge is that. So then if it doesn't have other topics, then how is it its own study? Logic. So that's the whole point. The Anvikshiki is you have the Praman and Pramaya. That comes from the philosophy. Then you have the other items, the other 14 items to show how to logically...look and analyze that Praman. Does that make sense? So that's how then Anvikshiki comes in. It means it's the combination of the spiritual knowledge and the logic to analyze that. Okay. As presented in the Upanishads, right? Because they give the Adhyatma Vidya. Therefore, by mentioning the categories like Shamshaya, etc., it is seen to have its unique subject matter.Nyaya has no relevance, pravartate, for unknown objects. Nyaya has no relevance, pravartate, for unknown objects. Unknown objects. Nor, oh, that's why, because there's an and after this, okay. For those known, nor for those known for certain. Footnote 2. Does that make sense? So things you have no connection with, know nothing about, there's no use of logic. And for those you completely know, there's no use of logic because you already know it. Does that make sense? So it has to be something that is known but only partially. That's where logic comes in. Does that make sense? Yeah. Footnote 2. Since the Supreme Lord is beyond human intellect, it is impossible to know Him, the unknown object, through logic. This is explained by Srila Prabhupada and Chaitanya Charitamrita as follows. So, therefore, because God is unknown, that's why we say through logic you can't know Him. Because logic can't deal with the unknown. Okay, this is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila 541. Partiality, neutrality, and all such qualities are present in God. Otherwise, they could not be experienced in the creation. Since He is the total existence, all things are properly adjusted in the absolute. In the relative world, such qualities are displayed in a perverted manner, and therefore we experience non-duality as a perverted reflection. Because there's no logic to explain how things happen in this realm of spirit, the Lord is sometimes described as being beyond the range of experience. But if we simply accept the Lord's inconceivability, we can then adjust all things in Him. Like Sola says, He's beyond, so therefore whatever goes on here can't have anything to do with Him. Right? So that's using what our thing to try to understand something that's unknown. Right? Non-devotees cannot understand the Lord's inconceivable energy, and consequently for them it is said that He is beyond the range of conceivable expression. The author of the Brahma Sutras accepts this fact and says, Shruteshtu Shabda Mulatvat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being inconceivable to an ordinary man, can be understood only through the evidence of the Vedic injunctions. Yeah. The Skanda Purana confirms Achintya kalau te bhava na tams tarkena yojayet. Matters inconceivable to a common man should not be a subject for argument. We find very wonderful qualities even in such material things such as jewels and drugs. Indeed, their qualities often appear inconceivable. You know, yeah, how a jewel can do or reflect light or do things that, or how the drug, you just take that and it, you know, it helps your health and that and things like that. Therefore, if we do not attribute inconceivable potencies to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we cannot establish His supremacy. It is because of these inconceivable potencies that the glories of the Lord have always been accepted as difficult to understand. Right? So that which is beyond, you can't use logic. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why we have to have Shabda. If we want to know the Adhyatma beyond, we have to have Shabda. Because then transcendental knowledge can only be known through the scripture, where the Lord and the great sages who are on the liberated platform reveal the position. Right? Then we can take something, what we have here, and then try to connect it to it. That's where logic will come in. So, what then is logic's relevance? It has relevance only for those objects about which there is a doubt, i.e. those that are partially known. That is said by Gotama. You have a doubt, that's what logic's for. Right. Finally, so people who just are working on sentiment, they just feel like it, you can't use logic because it's about a doubt. They don't have a doubt, it's a feeling.
So how do you deal with
feelings? Faith.
Feelings. How you deal with it if you don't use logic?
I mean for yourself.
No.
I mean for others.
For people, you know, if it's a logical discussion, supposedly.
I mean the most probably straightforward one would be leave. That's Nigrahasthana. That's why it's called Nigrahasthana, because you're not dealing with a doubt anymore. You're dealing with a misgiving. And misgivings, how do you approach it through logic? Because it's just a feeling in the mind. It's not a doubt. Where therefore, if someone has a doubt, you can deal with it. But if it's a feeling, then unless you can find something that's common to that feeling and experience, and that's common to what you're expressing, then only you can make the connection. So that would be the way to do it, is bring about the connection between the two, then it'll bring up the doubt, exactly how does it connect. Then you can discuss. But if you can't do that, so that's why you see is different individuals, they do well in certain fields of preaching, because they can make that, they can bridge that gap. They can see what things to say that will bring about the intellectual process. Or take it out of that process, and so you don't have anything else other than intellect. Like we were discussing sometime before, when you work on the platform of just the transcendental, then people don't have experience of that, therefore they can't bring their emotions up to connect with it. So they can't come up with any arguments. But you present it, it sounds logical. So once they've logically accepted those things, now they kind of have a samskar or an impression within that transcendental that's been logically established. And so it makes sense, though they don't know how to apply it. Then when you start bringing it down into the environment of where they would apply it, you know, in other words, their live world situation, then you have a basis by which it has some intellectual connection. So even though the emotions may be there, you can go back to that intellectual point that they've already accepted, and then show the connection. Does that make sense? So that's also an advantage for that logically dealing on that way. Because otherwise, you have to just go by the feelings, and then unless you're really good, how do you take things through the feelings to make it progressive? Because much of the time people spend just trying to get them to appreciate and don't actually take it from there. And like I mentioned, I went to one yoga studio and they've been running a class for 6 weeks. They told me don't bring up anything about Krishna or Hare Krishna or anything like that. So in 6 weeks he hadn't actually introduced about God. And, you know, you're doing yoga from India and everybody knows about mantras from India. So here's a mantra from India. What's a big deal? It's the highest form of yoga. You know, you're into yoga, so you sit there, and then while they're sitting there and you're straight and all that, then they get them to repeat the mantra. You know, something, you know. But they didn't. So they could catch their attention on the level of yoga, but they did not have any idea how to take that further. So then we see probably established that it's logical. You would explain the transcendental position in a logical way. Then you have a samskar that now you can deal with all those. You know. So if that works, then you do. You can get through. If not, then you have something you forgot. You left the kids' breakfast on the stove, and you got to run to turn it off. You know something. You know, you have an appointment with a dentist. Some important things too. Okay. So as said by Gotama, final ascertainment, nirnaya, is the ascertainment of an object through consideration of thesis, paksha, and antithesis, pratipaksha, which result from doubt, vimarsha. Nyaya Sutra 1.1.41. So you see here is that you're dealing with, you have the thesis and you're dealing with the antithesis. That's what you're clearing. So whether there's someone there to create the doubt or not, you can bring up the different aspects and then, you know, deal with them. But if someone comes up with it, then that will then, as we were discussing yesterday. Here, ascertainment of the object means nirnaya, or right knowledge, tatvijnana. Consideration of thesis and antithesis means the application of nyaya. And vimarsha means doubt. Footnote 3. Though it is pointed out previously that one cannot understand the Supreme Lord through mundane logic, it doesn't mean that spirituality is mere dogmatism. Logic, if applied in its true sense without bias, forms an integral part of spiritual understanding, as it helps us in not being misled by bogus or unscrupulous persons. This is elaborated by Srila Prabhupada as follows. The Vishnudutas, like all genuine servants of God, understood everything according to logic and reason. The instructions of Krishna are not meaningless dogma. Religion often gives rise to dogmatism. So dogmatism and godmatism. Right? Okay. But the author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Krishna's Kaviraj, urges us to try to understand Lord Chaitanya and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness according to logic. In other words, do not follow blindly on the basis of sentiment alone. One who fails to apply logic can easily be misled by unscrupulous persons. For example, some so-called missionaries advertise that man can become God, and they attract millions of sentimental followers. But how is it possible? Where is there evidence of any man becoming God? This false propaganda is not at all logical. One should use his intelligence to understand Krishna consciousness. However, since we have accepted the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and then taken initiation from the bona fide spiritual master, we cannot argue with him. We cannot challenge. To do so would constitute an offense and a fall from spiritual principles. Second Chance, chapter 14. So that means this. Before taking initiation, you should look at things very clearly and be convinced. And if you're convinced, then you accept. So it's not dogmatism. We can explain it. But the point is you're supposed to work these things out before you take initiation.
Hmm? Yeah, well, the difficulty is that most everybody, they take initiation because of feelings. It's not logical, or it's their own interpretation of reality, whether it's there or not.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean,
yeah,
it's quite immature, actually.
Yeah, it's immature, so therefore then it'll create stumbling blocks. Because then as they go, since they don't have a solid foundation in that way, then when they get to that you know, anartha nivritti gets more strong, you know, more dynamic, then they may get distracted. Because Prabhupada's talking about faith. He's talking about the aspect of firm faith. You have the firm faith that Krishna is God. You know, and we're his servant. So that starts the process. You know, and then you take up association and all that. Right? But then we see is that the acharyas are also defining firm faith as meaning that you have the faith that no other process other than bhakti can get you to that position of prema, right? Or that position of relationship with God. So we see is that devotees who come, they're firmly fixed that Krishna is God, but they're not firmly fixed that all these aspects of karma and jnana aren't very important for devotional service. So that would be what we talk about, the Kamala Shraddha. But at the same time, as they come, the difference between Kamala Shraddha before and at this point, what we call Shraddha, is they have firm faith that Krishna is God. That's then you can say now they start that Shraddha and prema. Before that, it's Anjata Sukriti. So faith is there, but it's like there's that overlap. So now they've added, they have firm faith in God, but they're not have necessarily firm faith in the process. So that when you get to the point of Nishtha, the Madhya, then they have full faith in the process. Right? That will then very quickly take them through. So it's there. So it's not that the Kamala Shraddha says they have no faith. Now they have firm faith in Krishna, but the process is a little bit weak. So the religious side is a little bit. Then when that becomes so strong, so then the philosophy and the religion are strong. So you see where they don't accept Varnashram, don't accept this, that, or, you know, over Westerners. That's all within that Kamala Shraddha, where they're not accepting the process. But they do accept that Krishna is God and that they're the soul and servant of God. So on that they have, you could say, firm faith. But it's not broad enough to bring them to Nishtha. Yes, please.
in this book, Dharma, the Path of Transcendence, like Prabhupada describes about this aspect which he is talking about, one should not like question Guru and then follow as it is. So that's the stage of Anartha Nivritti. Then one can cross over all the anarthas only when one follows the instructions of the Guru. Then by the strict practice of devotional principles under the instruction of Guru can all the anarthas be removed. Then one comes to the stage of Nistha. So initially, in one sense it's not wrong, somebody takes initiation just to take the association and have some feelings. It's
yeah, but that would be first.
That is the first, initial, then adosh rather than.
Yeah, but second, technically, Prabhupada was kind of saying, when you take second, so then it's supposed to be that dhrita nishtha. Before that might be the kamala, though you have faith in Krishna. Means before that you join the temple, then it'll just be kamala shraddha. Then when it comes to the point where you see, okay, I want to take initiation and stuff like that, then it will have that you're convinced Krishna's God, you're a servant, things like that. Then you're following your own spiritual life. So it's all right. But technically it should be a second. But most of the time second for many is more of a social thing. You know, it's like they're not doing any puja at the temple, don't do it at home, don't necessarily follow the Brahminical kind of lifestyle and standards, but they want it because otherwise, you know, they've been around the yatra for so many years and others younger than them have, and if they don't have it, it's bad. And, you know, so from that platform, then it just becomes a social thing. So then, previously in the Vedic, then as long as they would follow the basic lifestyle, they would get, even if they didn't have the further faith and those kind of things, they would get upanayana. So then they have the thread, so they can say yes, and like that. But they don't get the pancharatric mantras, because they wouldn't have that particular devotional understanding and stuff or practice. This doubt, shamshaya, is the general acquaintance with an object without possessing definite knowledge, right? A general acquaintance. You kind of know it's there and all that. It's not that you can't see it. Does that make sense? So it's just like, let's say, like for an example, it's said that this is what, it means it's said this is what happened. It's when, I think it's Captain Cook arrived in Australia. Then he pulled into the bay of, I think that's called Byron Bay. It's a very nice bay. You know, so, you know, you have the nice land here and a big, huge thing, just a small opening. So inside it'll be completely, you know, still, you know, at least not the big waves, it'll be small. So he pulled into there with his ship or ships or whatever he had. The aboriginals were on the land. Nobody saw the ships. You know, and you know the ships in those days weren't small. I mean, they're not like the Titanic or something. You mean, the Titanic's nothing compared to some of these modern cruise ships and stuff. But, you know, they weren't like a little dinky canoe or something, you know. So they were quite big, but they couldn't see them because they had no conception about a ship. Right? But one of the elders who was watching, he was noticing the water was acting very weird at that place. So he knew water and how it acted. And so then, you know, does that mean a kangaroo fell in, or, you know, there's something this or that, or there's big fish, or, you know, and so the water will act. So he knew water will act funny under certain conditions, that something has to be there. And so he just looked at that place and then looked, and after some time, then he could catch that there's an object there. He didn't know what the object is, but he could see the object because of him knowing the water. So they couldn't see that because it's unknown. Then when he sees something that he's familiar with that creates a doubt, only then he can, through analyzation, see the doubt. So, like that. Though included in the category of Pramaya, it is separately mentioned for this special consideration, namely being the basic condition for the employment of Nyaya. Right? So, in other words, because there's doubt, therefore Nyaya is being applied. Otherwise, if there's no doubt, why would you? So how do you find what to apply logic on or not? You want to say logic is a subject, but how would it be a subject if it doesn't have a basis for being used? So that's doubt. So if doubt is what causes logic to be used, why wouldn't doubt be considered an element of logic? So that's why he's separating it then from Pramaya. It's what is proved, but unless there's a doubt, why would you prove it? You know what I'm saying? So if you say, you know, is this a microphone? There's no doubt, so there's nothing to prove. You know? Does that make sense? You know, can it fly? You know, can the microphone fly? We know microphone, we know flying, but we don't know if the microphone can fly. So now there's a doubt. Now we can start to analyze. So then applying the different places on how to analyze if it can fly, that's the target we discussed. You know, so yes, if it sits here for long enough, then after millions of years it'll gain wings and then it'll be able to fly. Right? But, you know, we can't sit here for millions of years and this and that. And then someone else says, no, but I've seen microphones fly like that. Where? So it was flying through the air like that. And so like that. And so then you go back and you find out journalists came up to talk to some guy who didn't want to be talked to, and he told him he doesn't want to talk, but he kept, you know, doing his journalistic in-your-face, you know, annoying thing. And the guy grabbed the microphone and threw it as hard as he could, and it went flying through the air. So in this way, then microphones can fly. You know, but then you can analyze that, well, it was flying, but was it flying on its own power? Because technically you would say something flies because it flies on its own power. Or it has the ability to stay in the air, at least for some time, more than just a rock, like that. You know, because other, you know, so it can fly on its own. So it doesn't have that, so then it's not flying. But then someone can say, no, but then a paper airplane, you throw that, it's not its own power, but it flies for some time, so it could be flying. You know, so if you put wings on the microphone, then it could fly. So like that, then you discuss.
Important stuff.
Yes, important. Very important. Listen. The discussions before were better, right? We were talking about something to eat, right? Okay. Footnote 4. Nyaya has no relevance for either the totally unknown or the fully known. This means that Nyaya has relevance only for those objects which are known in general but not known definitely or specifically. Thus, for example, the hill may be known in general, but there may be doubt whether it contains fire or not. In this way, a thing may be known in general, but its specific nature may remain undetermined. Insofar as it remains undetermined, it becomes an object of doubt. And insofar as it is an object of doubt, it becomes an object of the application of Nyaya. Right? So if it's undetermined, it has a doubt. If there's a doubt, then there's a scope for logic. So logic is not for speculation, it's for clearing doubt. So that people use it for their own enjoyment, like we were saying before, many times intellectuals, they love to speculate on the thing of doubt. It's something you bring up a doubt that's that you can pleasantly apply the intellectual process to. That's considered very valuable. If you bring up one that has a lot of emotional content, then it doesn't allow for the free flowing of the mind, because you get stuck back to this feeling. Does that make sense? So as long as it's something that you can intellectually analyze without having any attachment, So that's why then when you give conclusion, it means what it is, and so therefore then you should be appreciated and accepted or not. So that's why in the academy, they don't like the concept of conclusion. So Siddhanta and, you know, actual, the Nirnaya, they don't want. Because it should be still left open that you can, for, you know, further speculation. In other words, if you have a theory that itself is able to create enough speculation and thought, then that's very, very good. But after thinking about it a long time, it gets old. And some people, you know, thinking about it, think of different aspects, and so they'll come up with a new theory. But it should be your theory is able to give rise to new theories. If yours says this is it and it's finished, then it won't be accepted by the academy because it won't be dynamic that you can carry on the speculative process, you know, like they have over the last 1,000 years.
Yes. Can we say that Vada, on its own, it has to have a Siddhanta?
No, but it's you're trying to attain Siddhanta. In other words, the intent is to attain Siddhanta. That was the difference between the three, Advaita, Jalpa, and Vitanda. That the intent is to find the conclusion, while Jalpa is simply to win. And but you have your own conclusion. You don't want to find anything else other than what you have. And then the Vitanda, that you don't have anything yourself, but you just don't like them. You know, it's like the frogs in the well. You're not getting out, not trying to get out, but you won't let anybody else get out. You know, if I don't have it, nobody's having it, that kind of thing.
Also, it seems that the modern science is speculative,
yes,
by nature. But what they say, it's progressive. So if you give them Siddhanta, which is a final conclusion, it's,
yes,
not just intermediate conclusion or,
yes,
whatever conclusion, a relative conclusion,
right,
then they think it's not progressive, so we can't,
okay,
go any further.
Okay, so that they can come. Okay.
So this... But the Veda gives conclusion, Krishna still Bhagavan Svayam, bas, finished. And, you know, his energies, and so it's very definite. But modern science, it's all up in the air, and it's always upgrading itself, so-called. So this is one of the reasons I thought they don't like conclusions, because then this is it.
Oh, yes, not progressive.
And I heard something about, sorry, that about perfection.
When perfection.
When you ask a person, what's perfection? They usually say, oh, we're on the way, or we're getting to perfection. But you never say that you are perfected this way. So for them, perfection is always the way to get there. While in the scriptures, usually you know what's perfected state. You don't go beyond that in the sense that you reach that, that's perfection. And for them it's always a moving thing. So you're always reaching something. I know it's not something, so it's
bad. That's interesting. Just from it, if you put it into our philosophy, then we would also say perfection is just one of the stepping stones through to prema.
Yes.
It's the platform on which you act. So they're thinking it's the action itself, though it's the platform on which you act. Philosophy of science.
During the last 2 centuries, they talk that they did this conclusion that in science every theory should be changing during 2 years. And they call it mutations.
Every 2 years?
Because every 2 years they have something new in every 2 years.
Okay. And then what was the term called?
Innovations.
Innovation.
Innovation. Oh, okay. So without innovation, it's not science.
Yeah,
but at the same time, they give their absolute conclusions, but then you're supposed to be able to adjust them.
There's the protection they're talking about.
Going for perfection. Yeah, but in that case, let's say we have a dog, and this dog has a tail, and he has, instead of the younger dogs, and he has noticed his tail. So he wants to attain the tail. That would be perfection.
Mm-hmm.
So he just goes after this. You ever seen that?
Yes.
Yeah, they just go around and they're trying to catch the tail. So they think they're progressing, but it doesn't necessarily mean anywhere. Yeah.
The science taught in high school, they have a kind of understanding there could be an absolute reaching to absolute.
There could be.
Yeah, and then the science taught in graduation and most and post graduation, knowledge is relative. And it's always changing, as she said. And even the one which you're learning right now, or one, the history of science which you learn about what Newton did or this guy did, it's only a platform which provokes you for new innovations. You need a platform for that. Otherwise, like, we don't include value of them
to speculate from.
Yes. So they include, don't value what they are learning.
And they pray that if they reach perfection, they will see idol. There is no goal.
So the point is there is no perfection, so how will you reach perfection?
Yeah.
Knowledge is, there is no absolute truth.
Yes. It's all relative, that means you can come up with your own theory. As long as the teacher can't defeat you, then your theory should stand.
The Soviet Union, that was not accepted. You couldn't have your own opinion on anything. You had to follow.
No, you could. It's just that it's just if you did have your own opinion and you're very strong in, about it, and then you would be invited to share your opinion with others who also have their own opinion. And there would be a special location for all of them where they could all stay and
close proximity.
Close proximity to each other and, you know, work together and discuss their philosophies. And so it's actually a very open-minded and accommodating, you know, society. Yeah, environment.
They definitely have their conclusion.
Yes.
Knowing how you should do everything was concluded and see how it ended.
The only thing it stands on is the pramanas which they have, which is pratyaksha and anuman, as Radha Dekra was reading about what is science.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be proven experimentally, it has to be like accepted widely, and it has to be verifiable. These are the points. So ideally you can prove any subject based on that, it should be accepted as science, but they don't because of the bureaucracy.
I see. But then you could say the bureaucracy is science because you can't prove it exists. You know, it is everywhere. It applies everywhere. So bureaucracy is science. Purpose, prayojana, is that which induces one to activity, right? So now he's going down and just showing the connection, right? So we did doubt, right? So then doubt, we can see is that in this, now he's presenting, you can see that there is kind of an order to why he's presenting, but it's more for establishing what's there rather than necessarily. So you have pramana and prameya, that's going to be accepted, but only because there's doubt, there's logic, and then you have to have a purpose, you know, in applying logic. So you have a doubt, but you have to have a purpose to fulfill. Right? Prayojana is that which induces one to activity. Prayojana. prayujate anena. All existence, all activities, and all branches of knowledge, vidya, are pervaded by a purpose. Nyaya too is thus employed only on that basis. Nyaya is the examination of an object with the help of the sources of valid knowledge. Pramanas. The inference, anuman, which is not contradicted by perception in scripture, is called anvikshika. Anvikshika, anu, that which follows, iksha, knowledge. And so you have to be able to see, so that's what Prabhupada is explaining. You hear from the authorities, then you're going to be able to see it in practically in your life. So that becomes shasha chakshus. So that's actually anvikshika. You know, when you brought it to that point, then you can say it's anvikshika. This branch of knowledge is called anvikshiki, or nyaya vidya, or nyaya shastra, because it is propagated for the discussion of anvikshika. Right, so it's called nyaya. Nyaya can be called anvikshiki because it's for the purpose of discussing and propagating, you know, that which is proved. Right, in other words, it's not for arguing just to argue. It's for attaining a purpose. It actually has a purpose. So the purpose, it means, in your logical application, it should have a purpose, but logic itself has a purpose. And that's to understand actually praman and prameya, so that which is the atma-vidya. So logic is actually to understand atma-vidya, it's not for something else.
So. Yeah, it's also very refreshing when getting into, you know, like nonsense arguments with somebody, then at a certain point, like I've seen you ask, so what is the purpose? What are you trying to achieve by this? Mm-hmm. And then people are like, what? And then they have to think about it. So it's a good tool just to bring everybody in line. Otherwise, people, maybe they don't even know why they got into it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, somehow it came up, mm-hmm. and then the discussion started, but what's the purpose? What are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
And then people are like,
yeah,
nothing. Then why waste your
time? Yeah. But just that you mentioned that also, just that it also be applied back on doubt, because you said, what is your doubt? Because they're giving a history and this experience and that one said that. No, what's your doubt? You know, we've been speaking the philosophy. What is your doubt on the philosophy? Don't give us the background of how you got that feeling. What is actually the doubt that caused the feeling? You know, what's the doubt? You know, so you could even catch them there. If they're doing that long thing like that, then you can say what's the doubt. Nothing can do. Then what's the purpose? And then that time, like you said, they can be quiet. Generally, you see is that in general, that you have from, you could say, 5 up to 12, you know, 5 through 11, you know, or at least 10, yeah, like that. So, in other words, that Pauganda age, that would be the age for memorization. Now, learning fundamentals, but the main focus is memorization, because then they can memorize anything. And they don't care, it's just fun. They don't ask, what's it for? So they can memorize shlokas, they can memorize, and then they know them. Right? Then you can say, it's basically from that time, starting at 11, but more at 12, and especially at 13, through 15. So 11 to 15, that's for learning technical mechanics of things. But they have to see that the mechanics do something. Not necessarily what it's ultimately for, just that it works. You know what I'm saying? So technical knowledge, that's the time. And they get into it because it does something. They have enough brain that they can see, but if it doesn't do something, they're not interested. So like if you go to, so they've already memorized your shlokas, then you can show how to analyze or how to use them or things like that. Or it has to be practical. Then from 16 on up, that's when they can get really deeply into the philosophy. You know what I'm saying? So then, so before that, there'd be any preliminaries. They'd learn the shlokas, they'd learn the fundaments, or the stories, they'd learn some of the points. Then they can do it at the more serious level. You know what I'm saying? The most. So in general, you'll see it'll work like that. You may have individuals who can start certain things earlier, and their memory lasts longer. Like I've seen some kids that they're in their teens, and they're happy to learn new mantras. And they don't know specifically how you're going to use it, and they're happy. But that's more rare. Most kids, it's like, I'm not going to use this, why should I learn it? Generally, you'll see there's the stories. So for the kids below 16, the story element, especially the small ones, you know, therefore the Mahabharata and this and that and all the stories, but then you learn the philosophy through that. But they're seeing more the story, and then they'll connect it to the point. But to look at the analyzation of the points after points, like we're going through here, that's generally from 16 and above. These mechanics you can do younger, but the philosophy, it'll work better then. So that's what we have is that from 12 they can start. They can start the Bhagavad Gita, and that they're getting the fundamentals. Though it's the technical philosophy, but you're starting there, they won't actually appreciate that. You know what I'm saying? Because Gita is there at that point. Gita is in the third canto. Gita is in the 11th canto. You know what I'm saying? So they're going to see it more on the preliminary level. But you see, as you can use on the highest level, explaining using Gita. So for us, they're all advanced level. It's just that there's a kind of a hierarchy in which, if you study, it makes it easier for you to get to somewhere. You know, if you're going to do study. But otherwise, if you hear anywhere, you hear Gita, you hear Chaitanya Charitamrita, your Bhagavatam. Prabhupada said it's like sugar. It doesn't matter where you start. It's sweet. So it'll be nice. You'll always get benefit. You want to analyze, and Prabhupada's given an order. So then they'll have done that, and possibly if they're, you know, sharp, then they will have done the you know, means the first 4 years, you know, and then at 16, then they can start the fifth year in Bhagavatam. And if not, you see most boys, then it'll start later. You know, they'll start to eat a little bit later, and then they'll start like that. So for many, it's when they're 16, then they start all this stuff nicely. So it just depends. The chart itself they can memorize and see what connects to what, but how that works in the ultimate conclusion, maybe or maybe not. You just have to see who you're working with, what they can deal with. But the main thing is especially before 16, but I think before 12, they can memorize anything. But starting from 12, you already start to see it's falling apart at 11. So you can say 5 to 10, it's solid as a brick. 11's all right, 12's right on the edge. But from 13, then they'll only memorize it if they see that they're going to use it, you know, in their life, you know. In other words, if they can make money off of it, they learn.
They understand it late,
and they grab it, and then you learn it. Yeah, yeah. And then when they hit 16, then they feel like, oh, what an idiot. Yes.
Maharaj, I see that the biggest challenge in explaining the philosophy, like the process of anvikshita to younger children is giving a proper drishtanta, because there is not enough relevance.
Okay, in their life. Well, that's why you talk about food.
Yeah, but still, in that also, you can't have subtlety so much on. Like to explain subtle principles become more difficult.
Yeah.
Though they can have the benefit of seeing it like through experience, but it's not matured anymore.
Yeah. So you get the religious elements they can catch. But the philosophical, the principles of it, they'll catch it. Pleases Krishna, is good for Krishna, and, you know, relationship like that. But these technical ones, then you see it takes longer. You know. So then if they start later, But it's not that they can't memorize things like that. That's why before, let's say, like one, I think it was in 74, one Brahmin was telling me in South that he, before they go to Gurukul at 5, before they go to Gurukul, they memorize Amar Kosh. That means from during three years old, 4 years old, they memorize Amar Kosh. So when they went to the, because Amar Kosh is a, it's like a dictionary, but it's in shloka form. So everything's explained in shlokas. So they can memorize the shlokas. You know, prose is a little hard to memorize. Shlokas are easy. You know? So they would memorize Amar Kosh. So when they went to the Gurukul at 5, they already had memorized a vocabulary of 10,000 words. They didn't know how to use it, but that's when at 5, then they go and they start the grammar. You know what I'm saying? And so then you start referring to that because they know the shlokas. Then when they go to the Gurukul, then they start learning the Vedic mantras, they start learning the grammar and all the grammar sutras and all the things like that. The sutras are a little harder to learn than shlokas. And so then, you know, like that. So by the time that they, let's see, what do you call it, 5 and 12, yeah, by the time they're 16, 17, 18, then they've learned the whole grammar, they've already memorized that, they've memorized the sutras, so they know how it works and everything like that. And so they know the words, they know the grammar, they know how to analyze them and pull everything apart. And so then when they hit like that 16 or young, then they can get right into the philosophy and they already have that as a background. So then they study that until they're 24, 25, then, you know, it works. Then you know what I'm saying. So that would have been the traditional system of learning Gurukul. But means you have the theory, but you've already shown, you've already sown the application before you got there.
Yeah. Another point in that regards is, as it is shown in the Arabic Shikhi, that when there is doubt and other things, and you come to a process of tarka to reach the conclusion.
Right.
But the conclusion can be reached even without this whole process through other two. One is through direct experience, okay. Something which is directly experiential,
right.
Then there is no need of this, and through Shabda.
Okay.
So before 10 or 11, then these two aspects are very much emphasized, and whatever we could learn through that conclusions we can reach to these two, then that are given, because the other one requires all this.
But the modern, especially during the Pratyaksha, it's all like that. I mean, remember the math books we were using in the 80s, they were just math. You open the book, there was only writing was there to explain what was the math. Otherwise it was just numbers and equations. But then I think someone brought, what was it? Maybe it was in the 90s or something, or you started seeing it introduced in the 80s, and that's where the math book, it was like a workbook. You know, like sometimes you get for kids these little books that have an activity book. They can draw something and put dots, or there's all kinds of activities to keep them busy. And in that book, somehow or another, in between, they put some math.
That's what I was shocked when we came to Israel. It was a when you came, it was in high school, and still it was work, you know, and we were always forbidden to write in the book, you know, you have to respect the book.
Yeah.
And then in there, you get all the activity stuff, so you just write the answer, doesn't matter how you got to it, and you know, all that stuff, it was so difficult to adjust. But once you adjust, forget about the old system.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, no, because it's all about the mind and your experience and this and that. Because I remember we were teaching the kids with that book and they were learning math really nicely. And those books were from the 30s. They're a very established book for teaching math. They were from the 30s. I can't remember what it was called, but we used to have it. But that, very nicely laid out, very nicely done by some very, you know, good mathematicians. And it was like the standard for, you know, like 30 years or still until
till the high school and the graduation level of Indians, Russians, and Chinese do study like that.
Yeah.
That's why they could work more on the software things.
Yeah, no, it's just more smart. I mean, I remember. No, no, but I remember coming when we were in, we were up in what was that place? Meghalaya. We went to visit some Marwari up there, you know, business guy in that. Okay, I remember we're sitting there, and he had his guy, you know, and the guy over next to him, he was this, and they were Marwari accountants. They didn't use local accountants. And they had these, I don't know if you've ever seen them, they've kind of like books that are about this long by this wide, and they got red covers. Yeah. And they got a string. When you open it, they actually become even longer. Mm-hmm. So this guy was doing the accounts, and they were numbers. They were not single numbers. They were like 3, 4, 5 digits, you know, different. And that, and the guy would just put his pencil or the pen on the side of the page. And he'd just move it down like this. And when he got to the bottom of the page, he wrote the number. Mm-hmm. Then he would flip the page, and then so again, like that. And I asked him, what's happening here? He says, he does all that in his head. He says, well, how can he know how to do all those things? Because, you know, he has numbers that are bigger. He says, we always learn times tables up to 30. Mm-hmm. So therefore, any number you come across, it works. You know, so he says that was standard, and said, and you learned that from when you learned the timetables, you know, when you're 5 years old, like that, and so then they would have it, everyone would line up. Okay, what's 27 times 19? You know, it's like, I don't know, you know, they're like, hey, yes, this is that. They just go on, and it's just, and so they knew it, and it was fun, and so they could do anything, and that's like what he was saying. That's why when you see this, that the, you know, India, I mean, Russia, China, and what was the other one?
Yeah, China.
Like that, it just, it was just, you know, they were so good at it. Because it was just, they memorized
it. Yeah, because we were not allowed calculators.
No, yeah, no.
No, up to high school, we were not allowed.
Yeah,
no. Only graduation.
I remember, I think at one point, it was, they wouldn't let you, you had to do it on your own. You could, means I remember when I was a kid, on those higher levels, you couldn't use a slide rule. You know slide rules? Yeah, you couldn't use that. Mm-hmm. You had to do it straight. But then I remember at some point you could use a slide rule, because once the calculator came in, they figured you have to use your brain to use the slide rule. So therefore, better let them use the slide rule and avoid it.
You didn't have
to.
I mean, we had the simplest one, not the one that could do all
these functions. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like in China, they would use the abacus. You said that I remember seeing something where the guy's going, they have all these kids there. And then he's going, 5,003,592,101. That he just keep like that kind of numbers. He just keep going one after the other, no break in between, and like that. And then at the end, then he says, "Okay, what's the number?" And the kids are all doing that. You know, I mean, these are the best at it, but they knew they had the answer. So. At least in there, at least you're using your brain and you see how it's working and how the numbers, so you have more of a thing.
That's initial stages of abacus knowledge. The last stage, which they call anzan. The whole abacus is in your mind, and that's why you see the boy is doing like this with the hands.
Oh.
There is nothing in front. That's their last stage. And Vedic mathematics starts at there. It doesn't deal with it.
That's where Vedic math starts. Like, so, therefore, once I was doing Vedic math, they're not going to be using that anymore.
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki Jai.